Baker McKenzie welcomes you to TMT Talk, the global TMT podcast series, focusing on sector-specific issues that are impactful on players in the technology, media, and telecoms industry.
Hello, and welcome, everybody. My name is Adrian Lawrence, and it's my great pleasure to welcome you to TMT Talk. Today, we are focusing on sustainability, one of our key trends for FY21, and looking at sustainability of the environment, workforce, supply chains throughout the TMT industry. Today, we're doing that in the context of M&A transactions in particular, and I'm very pleased to welcome my two panelists. Alyssa Auberger, our Chief Sustainability Officer for Baker McKenzie Worldwide, and Greg McNabb, an M&A partner with a focus on sustainability issues in our North American practice. So let's jump straight into it, and perhaps starting with you, Ali, what kinds of technologies are companies using in order to advance on their sustainability initiatives?
So hi, Adrian. It's great to be here. Thank you for inviting me. So there are a few different sustainability objectives that companies are trying to meet, or let's say advance by the use of technology. So there's one, you know, technology that's very interesting to meet traceability concerns, such as blockchain technology, which I think we're seeing used more and more to substantiate provenance and also movement along the supply chain. The blockchain will allow a company to view the origin and then the route of components and the products basically as they move through every step of their supply chain. So that's obviously of key interest these days. Because it tracks that product through the life cycle, it also has very useful technology to improve your transparency because you can help demonstrate exactly where the product came from. You can help demonstrate the provenance through its life cycle. And it's also being used to address challenges such as managing food waste better and for food safety or product recall purposes. So that's one type of technology. We're also seeing a lot of interest in secondhand and resale platforms. So online platforms that provide a way for brands to dispose, let's say, of older collections or product surplus, which is a much better alternative to landfill or to burning. Obviously, we had a lot of companies coming under fire around those types of end-of-life options, and so technology is much better. So recycling technology is another one. Technology to make products from recycled materials. You also see lots of use of AI to help better anticipate demand and avoid waste. So again, coming back to that, making what you need to make. And then similarly, also sort of the on-demand or responding to demand more effectively, a lot of use of 3D printing to respond to on-the-spot production needs so that you're producing on an on-demand basis as opposed to producing sort of large quantities of product. So there are other types of tech. Things that we can use to improve energy efficiencies, reduce carbon footprint, and then, of course, gather data that needs to be collected and kept so that it can back up any sort of claims and reporting that a company might want to be making about their sustainability targets. So the message we're always hearing is data, data, data. So it is clear that there needs to be efficient uses and regulation and monitoring of that data so that you can substantiate your claims. And then I think finally, an interesting area that we're seeing tech is in the plant-based products area. So whether it be something like mushroom-grown leather, which we're seeing more and more mainstream these days, or plant-based meat, which I think we can clearly say is mainstream, and even lab-grown materials, whether it's lab-grown leather, lab-grown meat, these are the things that I think used to sound a bit out there and a bit strange, maybe, or a bit weird. And there was a perception that this was the stuff of startups and it wasn't going to go anywhere. But actually, it's all gone very, very mainstream. So I think, you know, that is probably the most interesting and most recent use of tech.
That's great. Thanks, Ali. Huge amount going on in this space, obviously. So from what you've seen in the market, what really is the motivation behind all of that?
I mean, I guess I'd say it's not really that different than any other strategic acquisition, right? Whether it's to acquire talent that you don't have in-house or capabilities that you don't have in-house or access a new customer base or help you create organizational efficiencies, including notably in your supply chain and creating supply chain efficiencies. It's kind of the same principle here. It's not necessarily a purely commercial interest, at least not in the short term, but in the long term, I think you can argue that these types of bolt-on acquisitions are helping create long-term sustainable value. So that's something that companies are looking more and more at. So in addition to the full-on acquisition mode, we're also seeing companies looking at joint ventures or joining consortiums that can help them achieve sustainability goals, which that's sometimes things that they can't do on their own. So whether, again, if it's to improve their carbon footprint or to source differently or contribute to the development of, let's say, renewable forms of energy, or perhaps adding a product range or looking at packaging, trying to, you know, increase your existing product range or make things that are more environmentally friendly or environmentally sourced or to cut down on waste. A lot of times we're seeing companies joining up and joining forces to do that. Because I think the reality is that most companies, it's going to be very difficult. If they want to make bold moves, it's going to be difficult to sort of move the needle on their own, particularly when you're looking at these sort of massive sustainability goals. So that's where you're seeing, if you want to acquire a particular capability or collaborate, it might be a bit more efficiently. I think it's a little more efficient for companies to be working together. And then I think, you know, there is also, when you're acquiring a target, you're able to say that you're making progress on your ESG commitments. Sometimes acquiring a target with a great environmental or ESG track record is going to help you improve your own score. And consequently, that means that if it's not doing so well, it's not going to help you improve your own score. So there's a lot that goes into sort of the way you want to be diligencing targets when you're looking at advancing your own sustainability objectives, or at least not detracting from them. But I think that the due diligence focus is something that I will not continue to elaborate on. I think Greg probably wants to share some thoughts on that.
That's great. Thanks, Ali. So yes, maybe moving across to you then, Greg. One of the things I think that sets ESG issues apart from some other typical transaction issues around things like tax compliance, structuring of ownership, is that ESG objectives, they aren't yet completely codified in laws or regulation, and they're also continually evolving. So when you're evaluating a transaction opportunity, how do you focus or narrow those diligence efforts?
Thanks, Adrian. First, it's important to remember that in many ways, ESG concepts, as Ali alluded to, they're not new, and some industries have been focusing on them for years, some better than others. But for example, the resources sector has advanced significantly with respect to environmental and community engagement issues in the last 10 years or so. It's a rapidly evolving sector, but the pressure has generally been there. And companies have adapted how they respond to it. But environmental issues are often easier to address, at least with respect to compliance, than people issues, as we just now as a community are starting to realize that we did not acknowledge or measure some of the historical people issues in the workplace for good reasons, as you can imagine. So you have to be creative and cautious now in asking different questions to determine whether a target has a culture that aligns with your own. For example, right now we're in the middle of a transaction where we're asking about employee data that historically used to be asked so that you can get a feeling for how long your workplace has left in its kind of in its work life. That's no longer relevant because with depending on which jurisdiction you're in, age limits on mandatory retirement no longer apply. And so you don't have the same justification for asking for those numbers. So governance has also taken on a new focus. So in part driven by increasing liability and stakeholder scrutiny. Long gone are the days when a director or an officer can sit back and let others deal with critical issues without ensuring that they are properly being managed. So now we ask questions of senior management about what level the C-suite plays in setting the corporate culture with respect to ESG issues. That's in part because the definition of stakeholders has now increased. 20 years ago, stakeholders meant really the people you owed a legal obligation to, whereas now it can mean those people plus any number of outside parties to which you don't have a relationship that's immediately obvious, but that requires involvement from upper echelons of management when responding to or addressing these issues.
Thanks, Greg. So specifically then in the technology space, what types of ESG issues are you seeing arising as a real focus in those acquisitions? What kinds of things are tech companies really focused on?
Sure. So particularly in forward-facing or social media companies, and those are tech companies that have a direct engagement with the public or with their client base. We're working with clients to determine what proactive approaches are targets taking to creating content or imaging that matches with their stated ESG principles. So in other words, are their ESG principles reflected in the product or the output from the company? So for example, in the game development area, we were asking targets about how they integrate gender and climate conservation issues into their products and into their systems. So similarly, many large tech companies have taken an aggressive approach to carbon footprint management. So we've been involved in a number of arrangements for our large technology clients where they either purchase renewable energy directly from a project they have financed or sponsored, or they purchase renewable energy directly through a synthetic power purchase arrangement. But the objective in either case is the same, to be able to say with hand on heart that they've generated or are using renewable energy in their operations. In addition, tech companies are focusing on ensuring that targets have offered their employees an accommodating workplace or work arrangement. So we haven't focused on the impact of COVID-19 in this discussion. But as this was a topic that was on the agenda for many tech companies long before the pandemic evolved. But the pandemic has fast-tracked the adoption of different alternative work arrangements that do work well for employees with challenges in traditional workplaces. So those arrangements do, however, come with a number of issues to address. So, for example, by allowing employees to work from home, employers may now be subject to taxation in a different jurisdiction. So that's an evolving issue that's been brought forth or emphasized by the pandemic. State regulators are now focusing on audits of companies to see where their employees actually work from so that they can impose local state taxes on those companies as having employees in that local jurisdiction. That's something that we didn't see as a focus before COVID hit, but it's definitely tied to these work from home arrangements, which some of these companies were already rolling out in their workplace. So you need to know in advance of acquiring a target whether they have unrealized issues like that. So in using that example again, if you've acquired a target that's just now rolled out its employee or distributed its employees across the country and is in the coming years is going to be subject to a tax audit as a result of that, you need to be aware of that in considering that in your diligence process.
Excellent. Thanks, Greg. Obviously, a lot of interesting issues coming through there. How then do you handle representations and warranties around these kinds of issues, given that they're less measurable than typical transaction diligence issues?
So while they may not be as easily quantifiable as traditional risks and can therefore be falsely categorized as less risky, ESG-related non-compliance issues can often have explosive negative consequences for an acquirer who inherits them. Diligence is definitely one area that is handled differently than most transaction issues. Typically, while an acquirer wants to get it right from the beginning, we take comfort in the idea that if a target has been less than accurate or truthful in its disclosures, there will be some form of liability post-closing and some true-up or adjustment in the value exchange as a result. But with respect to ESG issues, it's much harder to take that approach, and an acquirer should focus on getting the diligence right and avoiding a transaction rather than getting paid for a misrepresentation after closing, as the stakeholders will not care about the fact that the issue was inherited and may be of the view that management should have detected the issue beforehand during the diligence process. In terms of representations and warranties, you have to focus on disclosure of indirect statistics that might indicate hidden issues, such as employee turnover or human rights claims. Ensuring that the parties involved in providing due diligence answers and materials are the key decision makers within a target is also important, so as to avoid the situation later on of having asked the right questions, but of the wrong people. And finally, asking questions in the representations and warranties about compliance with certain external evaluations also helps. For example, asking a target which emissions evaluation system they report into, and if none, why not, has become one way of determining whether targets actually do take emissions and emissions reporting seriously. In fact, there are literally hundreds of methodologies to report or measure relative emissions, so companies should be at least involved in one and be able to explain why they've, not only why they've picked that, but how long their reporting and their compliance has been on side with that, and be able to discuss any discrepancies.
Okay, thanks, Greg. That's fantastic. And that's all we have time for in the podcast today. I'd really like to thank Greg and Ali for those fascinating insights in what is a rapidly evolving and really important area for our TMT clients. So thank you both.
Thanks, Adrian.
Yeah, thank you, Adrian.